All right, we're beginning here on the top of Nun Vav Amud Aleph, five lines down. We left off yesterday with a braita that brought us three different categories of liquids with regards to a zav. It was the first category of liquids that don't have any tumah associated with them. That's the sweat, the pus, and the feces of the zav. We had a second set of liquids, which are tmeim because they are discharged by the zav and they come into contact with the zav. And that was dimateno, tears, damigafato, injuries, wounds, blood that comes from there, v'chalava isha, and milk production from the woman. And then we had the last series of items, which are called mayanot. Those are things that are discharged by the zav, the zavah, the nidah, which have very high level of tumah. They have a din of ava tumah. They are mitameh, almost identical to the individual themselves. And that is zovo, the zav emission itself, roko, his saliva, and memei raglav, and his urine. So yesterday we went through the sources for each of these items. The Gemara first spoke about what is the source that these three middle category liquids are considered to be liquids. Now we did that by, we brought psukim to show that tears and dam from a wound and chalava isha are all considered to be liquids, and then therefore they're subject to tumah from coming in contact with the individual is tameh. Then the Gemara already had dealt with roko, saliva, previously because it's mentioned in our Mishnah. And zovo as well, because it's mentioned in our Mishnah. The only thing that we hadn't dealt with previously was urine, because that's not mentioned in our Mishnah. And therefore over here, the Gemara dealt with the source for the fact that memei raglav is mitameh. And the Gemara gave as the source for that the fact that there's a juxtaposition between pasuk bet and pasuk gimel and perek tet vav, which is ki zavi b'saro zovo tamehu v'zot yeh tumato. And the Gemara learned from that juxtaposition of v'zot that there's something else. There's an additional item that also has tumah that is associated with it. And the Gemara said that that was the urine. The Baalei HaTosafot point out that in general, the word zot is a mute. It's from the vav that's in front of the zot, vizot, that actually is the riboy over here. And the zot acts as a mute in order to reject or to say that there's certain liquids that do not have a din of tumah, including the first three liquids that were mentioned in our braita before, as well as the dam that we're going to speak about today. They're excluded. So the zot is an exclusionary term, but the vizot gives us the inclusion of the urine. Now the Gemara says you need a posuk to tell you that the urine that is discharged by the zav is tameh, because you might have thought that it is not tameh. And that is because we have a precedent or a paradigm in dam ayotzei mipi ha'ama. When you have blood that exits through the member, over there, even though it's coming from the same place that the zov is discharged, nevertheless, the dam that comes through the member is tahor. So you would have thought the same thing with regards to urine. It exits through the same location, and even though it's exiting from the same location as the zov, nevertheless, it should still be tahor, like the dam hayotze mipi ha'ama. That's what the pasuk comes to teach you, that that's not the case, and urine is tameh as a mayan hazav. Now the Gemara says, you took it for granted that dama yotze mipi ama is tahor. And that's what the Gemara says now, dama yotze mipi ama minalan de tahor. How do you know that dam that comes out of the member is considered to be tahor? The Tanya, we have a bright that explains to us the limud for that. Yoko yoye dama yotze mipi umipi ama tmeim. You would think that dam that exits from his mouth or from his member, they would be tmeim. And obviously the dam that is coming out of his mouth has to be dam that comes out in a manner by which it would be a discharge. As Tosafot says, that it has to be bishotate. It has to be dripping out. Otherwise it would be tameh just because of the saliva that was mixed in with it, which we saw yesterday with regards to the mucus of the nose. Just Rav thought the problem was that it was mixed with saliva. As Rabbi Yochanan thought there was an inherent problem with it. So it has to be that type of blood that's coming out. Talmud Lomar, Zovo Tamei Hu. We have a mute over here. Zovo Tamei Hu. Hu Tamei, Ben Adam Yotzei Mipi, Vum Piyama Tamei, Ela Tahor. He is Tamei, or the Zov emission is Tamei, but not the Dam that is discharged through the member, through the mouth. That is not Tamei. It will remain Tahor. Gemara says, V'ipuch Ano. Why don't you flip those positions? Because how do you know that you have one riboy and one mute? How do you know what to exclude and what to include? Over here you have urine and you have dam. The Mara is saying that the urine is included from the bizot, and the dam is excluded from the hu. But why don't you just flip it around and say the other way around? That the urine is excluded from the hu, and the dam is included from the bizot. How do you know which way to structure it? Now, the Baalei Tosafot also point out over here, it's interesting that the Gemara is even asking this question from the outset, because we had a Gemara back on Daf Lamed Bet, Amud Bet, where the Gemara spoke about if a man has a discharge of Zav that is red, or he has a discharge of Dam, is he Tamei? And similarly, a woman who has a discharge of white, is she Tamei'ah? And over there, the Gemara brought Psukim to show you that the white discharge is what makes a man Tamei, not a woman Tamei'ah, and vice versa. The discharge of Dam or red by a woman makes her Tamei'ah, but doesn't make the man Tamei. So we already have a source for the fact that a discharge of Dam is not something that's considered to be a Zov emission. So why do you need over here another Pasuk or another source for the fact that the Dam is not Tamei? The Tosafot differentiates between the case back on Lamed Bet and with Bet, whereby the Zav was yet to become a Zav. Over there we're looking at emissions that would possibly make him into a Zav. And we're saying that an emission with Dam is not considered to be an emission, or a Zov emission that's red is not considered to be an emission to make him Tamei. Over here we're discussing a situation in which the Zav is already Tamei, Tumat Zav, and now he's having a discharge of liquid. Maybe over here that's the din would be different. Once you're already a Zav, maybe that discharge should have Tumat associated with it. Therefore, the Gemara is looking for another source to figure out how we know that Dam, that is, exuded, discharged during the time that you're already a Zav, that it's not Tamei. So that's what we discussed here, the Psukim, and the Gemara wants to know, how do you know whether the urine or the Dam is the one to exclude or include? And obviously, if we say it's excluded, it doesn't mean it's Tahor the Gamre. It means that the Dam that comes out, it doesn't have Tumat Ava Tumah, like a Mayan Azav, but it still have Tumah, like the middle category in the Braita, of liquids that are considered to be Mashkim, and when they come into contact at the point of discharge from the Zav, they will be Tameh like a Rishon the Tumah, because they're in contact with the Zav, who's an Ava Tumah. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. So Rabbi Yochanan says over in the name of Shimon Bar Yochai, every time the Gemara uses the word Mishum, it means that that individual never saw the party that actually said it, but they had a bit Misora from that individual. Rabbi Yochanan never saw Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. And so Rabbi Yochanan is saying it over in the name of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, but he didn't hear it directly from him. Dumya Derok. It's similar to saliva. Marok shemitagel viyotze, just like saliva pools first and then is discharged or exuded. Avko shemitagel viyotze, so too anything that pools first and then is discharged. Yatzadam, so blood is excluded shein mitagel viyotze, because it doesn't pool first and then go out. It drips out, it flows out, and therefore it doesn't qualify as a mayan. Where it says, varei chalav shibi isha, what about milk that the woman discharges, shemitagel biyotze, that does pool, and then is discharged. It pools first, and then is released by the woman. So if that's the case, then the chalav isha should also be subject to mayan. And we said already back in the Braita, v'amamar, chalav shibi isha, metameh tumat mashkim, the chalav isha that we saw in the Braita has tumat mashkim, and therefore it has tumah from being in contact with the zav, mashkinin, avalo mitumah chamura. It's considered a mashke that touched the zava or the nida, but it's certainly not considered to be a mayan. And therefore, how did you have this be the qualification for a mayan if then it would have included milk, which is not included in those items that are tumah chamura? Ella, we have a different formulation of Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Dumya derok. That said, the qualities of rok, marok mitagel viyotze, just like saliva pools and then is discharged. Vechozer v'nivla, but it also could be reabsorbed. It can be taken into the body. Avko mitagel v'yotze. So too, any liquid that pools first and then is discharged. Vechozer v'nivla, and it also has the capacity to be reabsorbed into the individual if you don't discharge it. Yatzad dam shenu mitagel v'yotze. So dam is excluded from this qualification, this formulation of what a mayan is, because it doesn't pool first and then go out. Yatsa chalav shabisha, and the woman's milk will be excluded from the definition of a mayan. Shafa pishamitagel biyotze, even though it pools and then is discharged, eno chozer v'nivla. It does not get reabsorbed into the body. Once the milk is produced, it needs to be discharged. Otherwise, it won't disappear. It doesn't go anywhere. Gemara says, v'neleif mizovo. Why don't we learn from the zov emission itself? The zov emission, we already determined in yesterday's daf, that the zov emission has the same din as the zav himself, with certain exceptions that it doesn't have the exact same chumrah, but we learn from the word v'zovo tamei and v'zav et zovo, that the emission of the zav has the same din as the zav himself. So why don't we learn zovo to be the paradigm of items that are discharged that will have tuma chamura. Ma zovo shein mitagel v'yotzei mitamei. When it comes to the zov emission, it doesn't pull first and then discharge, and yet it's still tamei. Afko, say the same thing with regards to any liquid that's discharged that have the same din as the zov. Meaning that, where did you get this definition of mayan? When we have examples of other liquids that have the same din as the zav, anava tuma, tuma chamura, that don't meet this definition. Amarava, mizovo, leka namelef, shikain gorem tuma lacherim. Zovo cannot be the paradigm for that which determines which liquids have a din of mayan, because the zov emission is unique. The zov emission is not simply an emission from the zav, the zavah, the nidah, but it is an emission that actually causes tuma. It is what triggers the tuma in the individual. So the zov might be tamei, not because it's a mayan, but because of its ability or capacity to make the individual tamei. On the other hand, the mayanot that we're speaking about here are liquid discharges that don't make the individual tamei, but yet they are considered like mayanot, and therefore they have a classification like an av hatuma. And Tosafot over here says, well then, what is the source for the fact that mayanot have a definition of mitagel v'yotzei, they pull and then they're discharged, plus the other definition, which is that they're chozer v'nivla, that it can be reabsorbed. And that is because the pasuk says, v'chi yarok hazav. The Torah tells you that the saliva of the zav has the same status as the zav, or has a tuma chamura that's associated with it. And that sets up the paradigm of what's considered to be a mayan. On top of that, we also have zovot amehu, vitzot, tia tumato. So you have two ribuim that are telling us that there are liquids that have a din, like the zav himself, that are an avatuma. And through that, we create the definition of what are the items or the liquids that have this din of mayan hazav. And Tosafot then creates a tzrichuta as to why we need the inclusion of urine from Vizot, and why we need the inclusion of Kechol v'Neo and Me'ahaf from Yerok, because between the two of them we have a tzrichuta, because if you had just had Meraglim, you would have thought only things discharged through the Ama have a din of Mayan. Had you just had the din of Rok, you would have thought only things that came out of the mouth, not things that come out of the nose, and therefore I need both of them to include all the types of mayanot that we include, and the definition of the mayanot comes from the aggregation of urine and roke to give us the definition of pooling and being discharged, as well as the fact that it's reabsorbed. Rashi makes an interesting comment here with regards to urine, and that is that when you urinate, it seems like it pools first and then is discharged. I'm assuming that it's a reference to the bladder, where the liquids collect and then they're discharged. But where do you have the chozer v'nivla? Rashi over here says, kagon silon shel meraglaim. When you have a stream of urine that is being discharged by the individual, when you stop urinating, chozer v'nivla, it then retracts or pulls back. So it's interesting that he thinks that the arc of the urine that's being discharged by the body, when you stop urinating, that he feels like it's reabsorbed into the body or pulled back into the body. It's interesting that that's how Rashi viewed chozer v'nivla, as opposed to maybe the other possibility, which is also somewhat difficult, which is that if a person stopped urinating in the middle, and then they don't have to urinate for another while, so maybe they thought that it was reabsorbed into the body. Whatever it is, it's interesting from that perspective as to what it means, chozer v'nivla, with regards to urine. It's also interesting because the Gemara doesn't think that the dam that's discharged by nida is considered to be a ma'ayan, because it doesn't pool before it's yotzei. So the fact that urine pools in the bladder and then is discharged is considered to be mitagel v'yotzei, whereas dam anida, which pools or is found inside of the uterus and then is discharged, is not considered to be a Mayan, even though we discussed already in the previous Dafim that Damanida has its own level of Tumah, but that's because of a special reboy by Damanida, not because it is a Ma'ayan. All right, so now the Gemara continues with the Mishnah, and the Mishnah told us that a Sheretz has a din of Ava Tumah only when it is moist, not when it is dried out. Amresh Lakish, Sheretz Shiavash. If you have a sheretz that dried out, which means that, according to our Mishnah, it would not have any tum'ah. Nevertheless, if it is sheled, sheled normally means the skeletal structure of the item, although over here it's not really clear, and Rashi seems to give a slightly different definition to it, which is defus tzurato, that it has the shape of the original item that is there. So if you have a totally dried out sheretz, but yet if you look at it, you can see the entirety of the sheretz is there and its structure is still intact, then that makes it tameh. Vaha anantnan, our Mishnah seems to indicate otherwise, mitamim lachim ve mitamim yevishim, that our Mishnah says only when they're moist are they mitameh, not when they're dried out. Rabbi Zeira lokasha habakulan habamiktzatan. That's not a problem because it depends how much of the sheretz is left. If you have just a piece of the sheretz, if it's dried out, it won't cause tumah. Rish Lakish's definition of what is tameh when it's yavesh is only when the entirety of the sheretz is there. The whole thing is intact, it's just dried out. In that case, it will have a din of tumah. D'tanya, we have a braita that supports this understanding. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak v'Rabbi Bisna, Amar Rabbi Shimba Yochai. I'll just note it, interestingly enough, because the Gemara is going to bring a braita twice. And the first time the bright is brought, it says, Amar Rav Yitzchak bar Rabbi Bisna, in the name of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, which means that he heard it from Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. And then the next bright that says, Mishum Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, which seems to indicate that he didn't hear it from Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, and that he had just heard it over in his name. So the quote from the Sukkim that are found in Parshat Shmini with regards to the Sheretz, whereby it says in those Sukkim, Kolon Ogeya Bahem, and then it says, "V'chol asher yipol alav mehem v'motam yitma." So the Torah uses both the word bahem and mehem to describe tumata sheretz. And now it says, "Bahem yachol bikulan." Bahem means that you came into contact with them, the entirety of them. Tamalomar mehem. Mehem means from a piece of them. E mehem. If it's just a piece of them, yachol b'miksatan. You would think that you could even touch a small portion and you would be tamei. Tamalomer bahem. You have to touch the entirety of it. Haketzat. How do I reconcile the fact that the Torah in some places requires you touch the whole sheretz? In other places only requires that you touch a portion of the sheretz. So that's not a problem. Kambalach. Kambiyavesh. It's exactly the distinction that we made to solve the problem of Reish Lakish's din over here versus our Mishnah, which is that there's a difference between whether it's moist, then mehem. Any piece of them would make you tamei. Whereas if they're yavesh, they only make you tameh if the entirety of the sheretz is there. Tosafot just does point out the fact that from bahem and mehem, we also learned the shiur of ke'adasho. We saw that earlier in the Masechta as well. But nevertheless, Tosafot says that that is an asmachta from the psukim. And that's not an absolutely mood, because shiurim in general are halacha the Moshe Mitzrayim. And therefore, even though we learned something from the pasuk, that was only asmachta. And the real limud from the pasuk is that which is brought here by Rabbi Yitzchak bar Bisna in the name of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Amar Rava, Hane Zvuge Dimechuza. Rava says that these, and the way Rashi defines Zvuge is Tzav, these turtles that are found in Mechuza, and the turtles or the Tzav is one of the Shmonish Ratzim that's mentioned in the Torah, that when they die, they do convey Tumah. Ki Sheldan Kayemet Tmeim. When they are shaped, their skeletal shape, their form is still intact after they dry out, they are tmeim. And the truth is that Rava does not add really anything to what we've learned before. It just seems to be that Rava was making it contemporary in his city of Mechuza, which is the Zvuge have a din of sheretz, and that's maybe what he was pointing out. And since they have a din of sheretz, the din of Reish Lakish applies to them, which is that Shildan Kayemet, you're going to be tamei. V'amar Reish Lakish. Now, another statement of Reish Lakish, in all likelihood, they were said together, and the Gemara split them up in order to discuss each one of them individually, but it probably was said at the same time, which is Amar Reish Lakish, Sheretz Shenisraf, Shildo Kayemet Tameh, that if you have a Sheretz which was incinerated, as long as its shape or form is still intact, then it is tameh. So it's similar to what we saw before. Before we had yavesh, now we have that nisraf. Meitevei, is that really true? Nimtza sher tsaruf al gabei azitim b'fein matlit ha-mehuha tehorim. If you have a sheretz that was burnt up, that's found on top of a pile of olives, and probably these olives involve tarot or the trumot or something that would be affected by the sheretz, and a matalit, if you have a rag, a handkerchief, that is mehuha, that was decomposed, it was shredded, tehorim. They are tahor, shekol hatmeot kishat mitziatan. Because we have a principle that anything that, with regards to tumat tara, you decide about it at the time you find it. We don't retroactively assume that there was a sheretz that was alive here, died, and then it was burnt afterwards. We just assume that it was always there just as a burnt sheretz, not as something that existed beforehand that made it tameh. And same thing with the handkerchief. It's already disintegrated. That's how it got onto these items, and it didn't come as whole and then disintegrate on top of the items. And therefore, they would be tahorim, because we don't assume that it was in a state that would make it tameh. So now you see here that even though you have a sheretz saruf on top of zeitim, it's not mitameh. According to Reish Lakish, that should have been sufficient grounds to make it tameh. Again, Rabbi Zeira answers the same answer that he gave before with the first statement of Reish Lakish, which is, there's a difference between whether the entirety of the sheretz is there, only a portion of the sheretz. D'tanya, again, we bring the same bright, and this is what I noted before. Here it says, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Bisna Mishum, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, instead of Amar Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. The pasuk says, Kol Enogea Bahem, Yochol Bikulam, Bahem sounds like you have to touch the entirety of the sheretz. Tamad Lomar, Mehem, Kol Asher Yipol Alav Mehem Bimotam Yitma, Mehem, Imehem, Yochol Bimiksatan, you would think a portion, Tamad Lomar Bahem. Hakeitzad, how do I resolve that? Kan Bisaruf, Kan Bisheinu Saruf. One is when it was burnt, and the other one was when it wasn't burnt, or the same thing as we saw before, whether it was dried out or moist. Again, they have the same din here, just formulated in the world of Sreifa, but it's the same idea, which is that when the item is intact, it's moist and intact, then it can be metameh even with a portion of it. When it is incinerated or it's dried out, then only when the whole item is there is it mitameh, otherwise it's not mitameh. Right now, the Gemara continues the final part of the Mishnah, which is the list of the liquids that are problematic in the second grouping in the Mishnah. They're only mitamim lachim, but not yevishim. The first list, which was dam nida and ksait basar min hamet, they were mitameh lach and yevish. Now we had the second list of all the items in the Mishnah, including zov, neya, rok, sheretz, nevela, shechvat zera. All of those are only mitamei lachim and not mitamei yeveshim. How do we know that? Zav. By the zav, we know that dichtiv rar bisaro. We already discussed this earlier in the Masechta, but it says zotia tumato bizavo rar bisaro et zavo echtim bisaro bizavo tumato huyu. So over here, it says rar. As Rashi points out, rar means to rear, to drool. And he quotes the pasuk by David HaMelech, where he acts crazy in front of Achish Melech Gat. And so there, the rear, he was drooling from his mouth. So you see that it has to be liquidy, it has to be moist. Kecho, neo, viroko. How do you know those have to be moist? Tichtiv, vichi yarok, hazav. And when the zav expels his saliva, ke'ein rok. Everything there, these items which are included from the term rok, have to be like rok, and saliva is something that is moist or liquidy. Sheretz. How do you know that sheretz has to be something that is lach and not yavesh? Because it says that bimotam. Michipol ala mehem bimotam itma. Bimotam amar machmana ke'ein mita. That bimotam means in their death. At the point of death, they still have moisture in them, and therefore that's only lachim. Like the time of death, that's what they're mitameh, not once they've already dried out. Shechvat zera. How do you know that's only lach? Haruya lazria. Because by the name itself tells you what it is. It is shechvat zera. It's zera. It is something that has the ability to be mazria, to fertilize. It has the ability to create a conception. And Tosafot then questions, wait a minute, don't we have other definitions of shechvat zera that define it as something that can't be mazria? We already saw earlier that it has to be yorekechetz. It has to be discharged in a stream of pressure or force in order for it to be able to create a conception. So maybe only Shechvat Zera that came out that way should be Mitameh, and not Shechvat Zera that just dripped out, because then it would not be able to be Mazria. So Tosafot says that it has to be Min HaRa'uy LaHazria. It doesn't have to be something that was discharged or physically able to be Mazria. It just has to be from something that, if you looked at it, would be able to be Mazria or would have the capacity of Mazria, which means it has to be moist and not dried out. It has to be within the first 72 hours, not past that point in time. I think the way that I would have formulated it is simply that this is dealing simply with the liquid itself, the Shechvat Zera itself. What are the qualifications? It's not telling how it was discharged from the individual. It's just speaking to the properties of the Shechvat Zera itself. And that Shechvat Zera has to be something that's lach in the first 72 hours in order for it to be something that is Mazria. Nevela is the same as Sheretz, because Ichte v'chiyamut, when it dies, ke'en mita, like at the time of mita, that it's lach. So too, that's the only thing that has a din of Nevela, not when it's completely dried out. All right. Im yecholim lashrot, we saw in the Mishnah that even if it's dried out, if you can reconstitute its moisture or moistness, then it does have a din of being lach still, and it's not considered to be yavesh. The test that the Mishnah gave was that it has to be left for 24 hours in warm water and to see if it reconstitutes itself. By Rabbi Yirmiya, tichilato visofo beposhrim, do we require that the water remain warm throughout the 24-hour period? Odilma tichilato afa pishen sofo. Or do you have to deposit it in the warm water, but over time the warm water is going to cool down, but that's fine as long as you started out the 24 hours in warm water. Tashma, detanya, kama hi shriatan biposhrim. How long do they have to be soaking in warm water? Yehuda ben Nekusa Omer, mi'et le'et. It has to be for 24 hours. Tchilato, afo pish ein sofo. And it says that 24 hours, in the beginning it has to be warm water, but it doesn't have to end with warm water. It just has to start in warm water, even if it cools off over time, that's fine. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, tzvichim shiu poshrim, mi'et le'et. It has to be warm water throughout the 24-hour period. You see that it is a machloket tanaim as to whether you need poshrim throughout the 24-hour period, or you just need to start with poshrim in order to do this test. Rabbi Yossi Omer Basara Meit. Rabbi Yossi disagrees with regards to Basara Meit, as opposed to the Tanakamo believes that it's mitame lach v'yavesh. Rabbi Yossi believes that it's only mitame lach, but yavesh it is not. Mitame, as long as it can't be reconstituted to its original state. So Amar Shmuel, tahor militame b'kazayit, aval mitameh tumat rekev. Even though it doesn't have a din of basara meit of a kezayit, meaning that the din of tumat maga masa and oel that comes from tumat basara meit is in the size of a kezayit, that's only true when it's still moist, according to Rabbi Yossi. Once it dries out, it doesn't have that tuma anymore. Aval mitameh tumat rekev. It still has tuma associated with the meit, but it's based on a different category, and that is the rot of the meit. And we've spoken about earlier that the shiur for the rod of the meit is melot harvad rekev. Means a spoonful or a ladle full of the rekev of a meit is mitamei tumat masa ve'ohel. And what Shmuel is pointing out is that Rabbi Yossi's position with regards to basara meit that is yavesh takes it out of the world of basara meit, but doesn't take it out of the world of tumata meit. It still has a din of rekev, and that rekev will be measured by the threshold shiur of rekev. Tanya nami ochi. We have a bright that supports that. Rabbi Yossi Umer, Basara Meit Shavesh, Ein Yachol Lishrot, V'lachzor Kamo Shaya. It's so dry that it can't be reconstituted when you soak it in water. Tahor Min Tamei B'Kizayit. That won't have Tumat Kizayit, Basar Min Ameit, Avam Min Tamei Tumat Rekev. But it will have the Tumat that is associated with Rekev or the Rot of the Meit. And so we have a bright that explicitly says that that's the view of Rabbi Yossi. Alright, next Mishnah. Asheretz Shinimtza B'Mavui. If you have a sheretz that's found in an alleyway, mitamei l'mafreya, that creates tuma retroactively, ad sheyomar badakti et ha-mavui hazeh, until someone says, I checked this mavui to make sure that there was no tuma here, v'lo yabo sheretz, and I didn't find any sheretz. Oh, ad shat kibud, or the last time this mavui was swept out, because we're going to see in the Gemara that sweeping it out is the equivalent of doing a check. And therefore, it's mitamei retroactively until the last point in time where I can declare that this sheretz definitely was not there. Of course, that doesn't mean that anything that passed through this mavoi is tamei. It means that anything that was placed down in the area where the sheretz is found would be tamei. If it's something that was far away from the Sheretz, we don't worry about it. And that's because we are machzikim tuma in a location for a longer duration of time, but we're not machzikim tuma mi makom le makom. We're not machzik tuma to move from place to place, but we are machzikit that if it was there, it was there for a long time unless we knew otherwise. And that's what the mission is telling you, that l'mafreya retroactively, the tumat sheretz was there for a while. But it's not telling you is that because there was too much sheretz here, we're going to assume anything that went through this mavui is tamei. Only things that have a safek as to whether they were placed down or came into contact with the place where the sheretz is found will have a consideration of tuma, but not things that were nowhere near there or never came in close contact with the sheretz. We're not going to have a safek with regards to whether they are tamei or not. Ketem shenimtza b'chaluk. The same din applies to a stain that is found on a beget. Metamei l'mafreya. Hachimar badakti et achaluk hazeh. V'lo haya bo ketem. It has retroactive tuma. Causes tuma for the woman, for the beget, all the way back to the last time she checked the beget and says, I know for sure there was no stain on the beget. Oh, ad shat kibus. Or back to the last time it was laundered. So again, the Gemara will discuss, but it seems like that laundering has the same effect as a bedika. Umetamei bein lach uben yavesh. It's metamei whether it's moist or whether it's dried out. Rabbi Shimon Omer, hayavesh metamei l'mafreya, balach enu metamei elat shat shehe yachol lachzor v'liot lach. Shimon says that you can speak about retroactive tuma all the way back to the last time it was checked, the last time it was laundered, when you have a stain on the beggar that's already dried out. But if you have a stain on the beggar that is wet or moist, that's already an indication that it can't be that far back. It can only go back, whether it's 24, 48, 72 hours, however long it can be around where it's still moist, that's the maximum amount of time that it could be metamei l'mafreya because of the fact that you found it in a moist state. And a moist state indicates that it was a newly produced ketem and not a ketem that's already aged on the beged for some time. Ibailuhu, ad shat kibud. When we say that the sweeping of the alleyway makes it that it's clear of shvatzim, do we say that that is because cheskato baduk? Because we assume that when you sweep the area, you also check the area. Odilma cheskato mitkabed. Or maybe simply the sweeping itself is sufficient grounds to say that there is no sheretz here. Do we say that sweeping includes within it checking, and therefore the person checked? Or do we just say sweeping by itself accomplishes the same thing as checking? So my nafkamina, what's the nafkamina between these two formulations? Damar kavid velo badik. It's a case where I swept out the area, but I didn't check it. He tells us explicitly that he swept without checking. So now is that a good enough threshold to tell us that you can no longer have tuma more retroactively than that point in time? If we say the whole point of sweeping is because when you sweep, you also check. Halo badak. He told us he didn't check. If we say that the sweeping is a sufficient grounds to assume that we cleared out any tuma from here, then hamit kabed. Over here it was swept out. It says inami. Another nafkamina between these two formulations is ishtakach biguma. You found it in a crevice. You found it in a hole. If you assume that when the person sweeps, they also check, then man the bodok biguma nami bodik. Then the person, when they check, they also check the crevices and the holes or anything that's found in the mavoi. So if we assume that when you sweep, you also check, then in this instance where we find the sheretz in the hole, we can assume that he checked there before and there was nothing there, and it happened post his sweeping of the area. But iamart cheskatomit kabeid, if you say that the reason that it's tahorier is because he swept it out, not because he checked, then mit kabeid biguma lo mit kabdo. Person doesn't sweep inside of a crevice or inside of a hole. And since they don't sweep in there, the sheretz could have been there even when they swept out the area, and therefore you can't assume that it wasn't there prior to the last time it was swept. So here the Gemara is trying to understand what the value of sweeping is. Is it something that means that I swept and I checked? Or is sweeping just simply something that has the equivalence of checking, but not that you literally checked? And therefore, in situations where the person says they didn't check, or in situations where it's something that would not be swept away because it's caught in a crevice or something like that, in those areas, then we'd have a nafkamina as to whether that's considered a cutoff in terms of retroactive tumah. Tosafot just points out that we have in the Gemara in Psachim, says that when it comes to gumot, when it comes to these crevices or these holes, that we don't assume that they are checked. Yet over here, the Gemara assumes that if you had a hole or crevice, it would be checked. So Tosafot differentiates between the different types of crevices or gumot. There's a guma here, which is an exposed guma. It's a guma that you can see into it. You can get access to it. It just is a depression or a hole, and therefore it's not swept up when you sweep the area normally. Then the guma that's mentioned in the Gemara Pesachim is a case where it's inside of a container, inside of something where it's underneath the boards or the wood there. That's the type of guma that we don't assume a person checks because it's not a visible guma. It's not an easily accessed or visible guma. Over there, we would not assume that the person checks the guma. Now, the Gemara asks, with regards to the ketem, a similar question that we just asked with regards to the sweeping. Ibalo adshat kibus chesgato baduk, odome chesgato mitkabes. Why is laundering considered to be a cutoff for retroactive tuma? Is that because when the person launders, we assume they also check the beged at the time of laundering? Odome chesgato mitkabes. Or just we assume that when they laundered it, it's laundered. And laundered clothing generally does not have a ketem in it because you laundered the clothing and took out the ketem. And the Gemara says, the may nafka mina. What's the difference between these formulations? Damar kibes velo badak. In a situation where they tell us they laundered it, but they didn't check. Yamar chesgato baduk. If you say that when you launder, that's considered as if it's a bdika. Halo badak. He told us he didn't do a bdika. Yamar chesgato mitkabes. If you just say that when it's laundered, it means that it's clean. Then ha mitkabes. This case, it was clean. Inami the ishtakach besitra. You found it in a side place or a non-obvious place. They found the ketem. Iamar chesgato baduk. If you say that it was checked, the beged when you launder, if we assume it was checked, mandabaduk besitra nami baduk. When a someone does a check of a beged, they check the entirety of the beged. Iamar chesgato mitkabes. If you say that simply when it's laundered, it just means it's clean, then besitra lo mitkabes. People aren't as attentive to dirt or stains in a side part or an area that's not obvious or visible. They don't necessarily launder it because they don't see it. It's only what they see that they launder. And therefore, maybe we would have to assume that this was here even through the laundering process and the tumah should go back further retroactively. Mar wants to know, Mai, what's the din with regards to these items? Tashma, Datanya, we have a bright Amar Rabbi Meir, Mipnei Ma'amru Asheretz. Exactly what our Mishnah said, that how do I know that Tumah Mafreya is impactful until you go back to the point where a person says, I checked it and there was no sheretz there, or until the point that it was last swept. He says it explicitly, the reason that sweeping out is considered to be a threshold in terms of retroactive tumah is because we have a chazakah that in general, Bnei Yisrael, when they do sweep out their mivot, they actually check them at that time. Vim lo badko, hifsidu namafreya. And if they didn't do a check at the time that they swept it out, then they lose out retroactively. I mean, the tumah continues to go back retroactively, and we don't have any cutoff then. Umeipnei ma'amru ketem shinim tzabe chaluk mitamei lamafreya. How do I know that a stain that's found on a beged is tamei l'mafreya ad shiomar bedakti et ha-chaluk v'lo haya bo ketem? To the point the person says, I checked the chaluk and I know for certain there wasn't a ketem in it. O check ibus, or back to the last laundering. Mipnei shechazkat benot Yisrael bodkot chalukehem b'shat kibusehem. Again, he states it explicitly. The reason that we rely on laundering to cut off the tumah retroactively is because we assume that the benot Yisrael, when they launder their clothing, they also do a check to make sure that there are no stains there. Bim lo badko, if they did not check it, if sido lemefreya, then they don't have the cutoff retroactively, and the tumah will continue to go back retroactively until we have an absolute certainty that there was no stain on this beged. Ravacha amar, tachzor v'tichabsenu. Why don't you go and check it? Launder it again, and see, im nidchem marito, if the stain is less pronounced after you launder it, bi'adua shalachar kibus, bim lav, so if the stain is less pronounced or the color is dimmed by the laundering, then you know that it happened after the last laundering. Because had it been laundered already, then it would have already had that fading in the coloration. And the fact that it faded this time shows you that it happened after the last laundering. If it doesn't fade when you launder it, then you know it already went through a laundering and it was there prior to the last laundering. So we can use that as the test to determine whether it happened before the last laundering or after the last laundering. Rabbi Omer, Enu Dome, Ketem Shalachara Kibus, the Ketem Shalifna Kibus, Shazemag Dir, Vizemag Lid. You can't compare a Ketem that happened after it was laundered, to a Ketem that was before it was laundered. Because there's a difference, as Rashi notes, between the way that the Ketem takes to the Beged. When it's in the Beged, and then it's laundered, then it's Makdir, which is that it is deeply embedded in the Beged, and you can tell that it's now a stain that doesn't come out or is faded into the Beged, but it's there, deeply embedded in the Beged, versus the Maglid is when it's first a Ketem there after laundering, then it is absorbed in the Beged, but also has a film or a layer that is left on the top of the Beged, or it has a thickness to it that can be identified. And therefore, you can look at the Ketem and be able to tell whether the Ketem happened before the last laundering or after the last laundering, because they have a different appearance after laundering than they do before laundering. And that should give you the ability to make a determination based on that. Shmamina, but what you definitely see from the Braita that we just quoted is that Chezkato Baduk Shmamina, that the reason that laundering or sweeping are considered to be cutoff points for Tumah Lemafreya is because we assume when you swept it, you checked it, and when you laundered it, you checked it. And that was explicitly stated in the position of Rabbi Meir, who is similar formulation to our Mishnah, which would make sense because Stam Mishnah is Rabbi Meir. Right now, the Gemara says, Mitamei ben Lach uben Yavesh. When it comes to Rabbi Shimon's position that was stated at the end of the Mishnah, where he differentiates between something that's dried out, that has Tumah Lemafreya, where something Lach only has Tumah retroactively until the point it could have been moist, Rabbi Lazar ben Padat, the Amora, qualifies that statement of Rabbi Shimon and says, Loshanu el Sheretz. That's only true by a Sheretz. So if the Sheretz is moist, then you can assume it died in the last period of time because it's still moist. If it's dried out, then you have no idea how long it's been there. Aval ketem lach nami mitamei lemafreya. On the other hand, when you have a stain that is moist, that's not an indication that it's a new stain, because emar yavesh haya, you could say that it was dried out, umaya nafal alei, but then water fell on it, and it makes it look like it's moist. So it could be that there was some exogenous item that now fell on the ketem that gives a simulation to a ketem that is moist, but it's not really a moist ketem, and therefore you have to assume that even with a moist ketem, it could have been there for a long time, and as if it was a dried out ketem. Sheretz nami. What about a sheretz too? Emar yavesh haya, umaya nafalale. Why don't you give the same reasoning over here, which is that it was dried out, and then water fell on it. So it looks moist now, not because died recently, but rather because it dried out earlier, and now it had water that fell on it that made it moist or simulate the effect as if it had died recently. Imita the hafihu, if that was the case, imrutute imratet, it would be dismembered, like the word marut, which means to pluck feather out of a animal. It would be pulled apart, meaning that if a sheretz is yavesh and then water falls on it, the limbs would not stay together or would not be reconstituted in the manner by which the sheretz was originally. The liquid falling on a dry sheretz will actually cause it to disintegrate or dismember, not to reconstitute itself, like as if it was moist beforehand. And therefore, if you find a moist sheretz, that means that it was recently that it died, and not there for a long duration, as opposed to a stain by which if you just pour water on it, it'll have the same effect as if it was a new stain. It would just look moist, and you wouldn't be able to tell the difference between them. And so therefore, he relegates Rabbi Shimon's statement that things that are moist only have limited retroactive tumah to the case of a sheretz, and not to the case of ketem. And now, next Mishnah, kolak tamim habaim mirekem tehorim. All stains that come from the city of Rekem are tehorim. Now, it seems to be that they have left the city of Rekem. They're not found in the city of Rekem. But you have a beged, or you have something that came from Rekem, and you find a stain on it. We assume they are tehorim. That is because we assume that the residents of that area were non-Jews. And since they're non-Jewish, they don't have a din of tumat ketem. As we noted before already, that even though when it comes to non-Jews, the chachamim were gozer on them, that the dam of oret kochavim is mitama kiroka and kimeme ragleha, and that they have a din of like dam nida or like zavin. Nevertheless, the Chachamim were not gozer by ktamim of the non-Jews. Therefore, over here, when we're speaking about a ketem, it doesn't have any tumah if it comes from a non-Jew. Rabbi Yehuda mitamei. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda says those stains that come out of that city are tmeim mipnei shehin geirim vitoim. They were actually converts, and they didn't realize that they were Jews, and therefore they don't follow the Jewish lifestyle or the Jewish procedures of being matznia, putting away or making sure that your stains don't get exported from the city, and therefore they make that mistake. And the problem is that they are actually Jewish. And if they're Jewish, the dam is tamei, and the stain is problematic. Habayim miben ovdei kochavim tehorim. Now we have the statement that if you have stains that come from amongst the non-Jews, they are considered to be tehorim. Miben Israel umiben akutim, if it comes from amongst the Jews, or amongst the kutim, Rabbi Meir mitamei. Rabbi Meir says they are tamei chachamim mitaharim, b'nei shlo nechshadu al kitmehem. We don't worry about, or we're not suspicious of the fact that they have ketamim that are floating around. And the Gemara will reparse this latter part of the Mishnah to make sense out of it as to why the Bnei Yisrael and the Kutim seemingly in here have the same din, when in all likelihood they should have a different din with regards to their carefulness and their alacrity with regards to tamim. The Rabbeinu Tam over here suggests that the word rekem in the Mishnah should not be spelled rekem, but rather rekes or reket. And that is because the Gemara in the beginning of Masechet Gittin says that if you get a get that's brought from rekem, it's a trustworthy get because that's a place where Jews live, and it's a place where they were well-versed in the matters of halacha with regards to Gittin. So the Rabbeinu Tam says you see from there that rekem was a Jewish city, yet over here it's calling it a city whereby things that are yotzei midasham are considered to be coming from non-Jews. So he says that you have to change the gears on our Mishnah to read Rekes or Reket, so that it's a different place. The Balei HaTosafot reject that change, and they say that there's a number of ways to answer the problem, one of which is to say that there are multiple places with the name Rekem. He says, I proved that to you in the Gemara in Gittin, and that is that Rekem is a name that is not uniquely associated with one particular place. There are a number of places with that name. And one of them could have been the Jewish city of Rekem, and the other one could have been the non-Jewish city of Rekem. That's number one. Number two is, even if it is the same city, and we said it was a Jewish city, we're going to say in the Gemara that when it comes to Jewish women, they don't allow their tamim, they don't allow their stains to leave their area of Tuma. They don't export their stains to other areas. On the other hand, when it comes to the non-Jews, they're the ones who let their stains go out or be exported to other areas. And so therefore, if you find a stain from Rekem, in all likelihood, it came from a non-Jew and not a Jew, and therefore it'll have a din like an Obed Kochavim. The Gemara then continues and says, Kaposik Vitani. The Mishnah is definitive in its statement that any non-Jewish stain that you find is considered to be Tahor, and it doesn't give you any limitations to that, which would imply Afilu Mitarmud, even from the city of Tarmud, that would be the case. I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Zoto merit. Rabbi Yochanan says, based on our Mishnah, you would conclude, Mikablim Gerim mi Tarmud. You're allowed to have converts come from Tarmud. Because the problem that you might have thought, which the Gemara is going to bring up in 1 second, is that the people of Tarmud are really Jewish, but Jews that got lost have got assimilated and intermarried, and therefore you might have a problem in terms of the status of those people in Tarmud. Our Mishnah seems to indicate that that's not an issue at all. And therefore, anybody who comes from Talmud is not considered to be Jewish at all. Ini, is that really true? Baha Rabbi Yochanan v'Savya d'Amrei Tarvayu, they both said, Ein mikablim gerim mitarmud, that we don't accept gerim from the city of Talmud. Now, the reason being, as Rashi notes over here, is because we assume that they are mamzerim. And that is because the Aseret HaShvatim were neglect to Talmud, and they ended up coming back there and marrying non-Jews or Avadim, and Rabbi Yochanan's of the belief, and we know this from the Gemara in Yevamot, Rabbi Yochanan's of the belief that a Bat Israel that marries an Obed Kochavim or an Eved produces a Mamzer. So of course the child is Jewish because of matrilineal descent and the woman is Jewish, but not only is the child Jewish, but he's a Jewish Mamzer because they believe that Mamzerut is created when a Bat Israel produces a child with an Obed Kochavim or with an Eved. And so Rabbi Yochanan the Shittato believes that the people of Talmud are actually Mamzerim because of this problem of assimilation and intermarriage. And so there, how could it be that Rabbi Yochanan over here is saying that Talmud is fine to take Gerim from there, Whereas he makes a statement that the people of Talmud, we have some suspicions with regards to them, that they are considered to be mamzerim. But he tema, if you want to say here in our Gemara, that it's zot velo svirle, that he says that this diuk you can make out of the Mishnah, but I don't hold of it. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Allah is a stam Mishnah. Our Mishnah is a stam Mishnah. Rabbi Yochanan has a principle that the halacha is like a stam Mishnah, so therefore he would have to hold of our Mishnah. My answer is Amoraim who v'libid Rabbi Yochanan. These are different Amoraim quoting the sheet of Rabbi Yochanan. One Amora believes that halacha is stam Mishnah, and therefore you'd follow the principle of our Mishnah, which means that the people of Talmud are fine. Another one has that the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan with regards to emikablim gerim mitarmud, and therefore he doesn't have this principle of halacha is stam Mishnah. He simply has the memra from Yochanan that you're not allowed to take gerim or accept gerim for Talmud, which means that he thought that they were mamzerim or they were problematic. Mark continues and says, Miben Israel. For Rabbanan, if the Rabbanan eat Israel mitare, if they say the stains of Jewish women are tohorim, teman mitamu, then who do they make tameh? They say those of the Oved Kochavim, those of the Israelim, and those of the Kutim are all tohorim. That means they have no ketem that is tameh. That doesn't make sense. So Mara says, Surei Mechzera, the Mishnah is missing some transitional phrases in there that help you understand it. That's what I pointed out before. The grouping of Yisrael and Kutim together seems strange. This is the way to read it. Miben Yisrael Tameh. If a stain comes from Jews, then it's Tameh. Miben HaKutim, if it comes from amongst the Kutim, Rabbi Meir mitameh. Rabbi Meir is mitameh. The Kutim Gerei Emetim. Rabbi Meir is of the Shita that the Kutim did a proper and sincere conversion, and therefore they are Jews, so their tamim have the same din as Israelim. The chamim itaharim, on the other hand, the chamim say that these stains that cover the kutim are tohorim, because the kutim gerei arayotim, they only converted out of fear of the lions, like the sukim tell us in Malachim Bet, and they didn't do a sincere conversion, and therefore they're not Jewish, and that's why they're tohorim. My says, then, ikar chaser min ha-sefer, yachi, shlo nechsh tedu al kit mehem. The reasoning why the Chachamim are Metaheri is not because we don't suspect them about their Tamim. The reason is because they're not Jews, because they weren't proper converts. That's what should have been said in the Mishnah. El Hachi Gamar, you have to amend the Mishnah to read in the following way. Miben Israel umiben HaKutim Tmeim. Stains that come from amongst Jewish neighborhoods or Kuti neighborhoods, then those stains are Tmeim because they must have sourced out of a Jewish home or out of a Kuti home. Therefore they are Tmeim. Because the Kutim gerei emetim, because the Kutim are proper converts and they're considered like Jews. Hanim tzayim b'arei Yisrael tohorim. Then if you go into a Jewish city and you find something lying around that has a ketem on it, then it's tohor. Shelo nechshedu al kitmehem. The Jews are very careful about taking care of their ketamim. Vatsnuyei matzni luhu. And if they have a ketem, the women make sure to put them away, to not let them get out. On the other hand, if you're in a Kuti city, then Rabbi Meir mitameh. Rabbi Meir says those tamim or those bigadim are tmeim. The next should do al kitmehem because the Kutim are not so careful about their tamim and they let them float out. They let them get out. Whereas the chamim mitarim, the chamim mitaher, shalom next should do al kitmehem. Chamim believe that the women of the Kutim kept hilchot nida on par with the Israeli women. We saw that earlier in the Masechta, and therefore they took care of their ketamim the same way that Israelite would have taken care of her ketem. So in essence, what we see here is, first of all, if a beged comes out of a non-Jewish city, then you can assume the beged is tahor, because it probably in all likelihood came from a non-Jew, and a non-Jew's ketem is not tameh. If you go into a non-Jewish city and you find a beged, then you can also assume that it's tahor, because it probably was sourced or came from a non-Jewish woman, but they're not careful about keeping their tamim contained, and therefore it would be tahor. On the other hand, if you get a beged that came out of a Israel city of Jews, or a city of Kutim, assuming that the Kutim are Geri Emet, then you would worry about the ketan that's on this chaluk, because it's sourcing out of a city where the women's tamim are tmeim, whether it's a Jewish city or a Kuti city, since the women's tamim in those instances are tameh, if you get a beged from that city, then you can assume it's sourced from a Jewish woman or a Kuti woman, and it would be classified as Tameh. On the other hand, if you go into a Jewish city and you find a Ketem, that would not likely be Tameh because the Jewish women don't leave their Ketamim lying around. And then in all likelihood, it was brought from the outside, or it came from a non-Jewish resident of the city, not from the Jewish residents of the city. And the Chachamim believe the same is true by the cities of the Kutim, because they keep the Halachot Nida in the same manner as the Israelite, and therefore they would have put away their Chachamim, not let them float around. And if you find it in their city, it probably came from the outside or from a non-Jewish resident, and it would also be Tahor. Rabbi Meir says that the Kutim don't have that trustworthiness with regards to Chachamim. Okay, next Mishnah. Kol HaKitamim HaNimtzaim B'chol Makom Tehorim. If you find a Ketam in any place, it is Tahor. Chutz min HaNimtzaim B'chadarim U'B'Svivot Beit HaTum'ot. With the exception of Ketamim that are found in the inner chambers, in the inner rooms of a house, and around the house of Tum'ah. The house of Tum'ah is the place that the woman went when she was in Nida in their days, in order not to be Metamei everything. Meaning that we don't really think of this conceptually, but if you're keeping the dinim of Tumah and Tahara, then a woman who is in Nidah is a huge liability because she makes everything Tameh. Everything she sits on, everything she stands on, everything she touches. And therefore, they used to have Beit HaTumot. They used to have a separate area, a separate house where the women who were Nidot went. So if you find a stain near those houses or in those houses, or you find it in the inner chamber or the rooms or private rooms of these individuals, then you can assume that they are Tmeim because then that's where they keep. Or that's the place that you would expect to find the begadim with ketamim on them. But anything that's outside of those private areas, we assume again, since the Jewish women are matzniyah, they're ketamim, you find it anywhere outside, then it was not a discharge from a Jewish woman. Either it was a stain that came from, like for instance, the butcher shop or from the shechting of an animal, whatever it was that caused the stain, or it came from the outside or a non-Jewish resident. Beit HaTumot shel ketamim mitamim ba'ohel. When you go into those places where the women went when they were Tmeim, in the cities of the Kutim, those houses are not only Tamei Tumat Nida, but they also have Tumat Oel. Because they bury their miscarriages inside of those houses. And therefore you'd have Tumat Ameit, because the day for the miscarriage could have been something that was determined already to be far enough along in the pregnancy that it was considered to be a Vlad, and it would be Metameim Kemate, and it would have a problem of Tumat Oel. Yudomer, lo yukovrim, they didn't bury their miscarriages there. Imashlichim, they throw it out, b'chaya gorerato. Animals come and eat it, so you don't have to worry about it. Tosafot does ask over here, since the Kutim are makbid on Tumat Ameit, how could it be that they bury the Nephilim there, and then they use those houses later on, because they are makbid on Tumat Ameit? So Tosafot says that they bury them there temporarily, and therefore you have a chashash when you go to Beit HaTumot, maybe it's at a time when they buried them there before they've exhumed them and moved them to somewhere else. But even the Kutim at some point move out those Nephilim, even though they bury them temporarily in those areas. Ne'amanim lomar, the Kutim are believed to say, Karvanu sham et Nephilim. We buried the Nephel over there, olo Karvanu, or we did not bury it over there. They are believed to tell us whether they did bury or did not bury a fetus, a miscarriage. Ne'amanim lomar ala behema im bichra im lo bichra. They also are believed with regards to an animal to tell us whether the animal already gave birth or this is the first birth of the animal. Meaning, is this possible that it will create a bechor, or there's no possibility of bechor because it already gave birth already? They are ne'aman with regards to that. Ne'amanim al tzion kroarot. They're also ne'amanim to tell us or demarcate where there are graves, where there are cemeteries in order to avoid tumah. But they're not believed with regards to lo al sichachot, velo al piraot, velo al beit apras, and not with regards to beit apras. With these two mot, the rabbanan, they are not believed. We'll see in tomorrow's daf that the sichachot in praot are dinim de rabbanan of tuma that relate to trees and branches that stick over areas that have tuma and into other areas where people traverse, or stones that protrude from a wall. That's Rashi's definition of it. We'll speak about all the different options in tomorrow's daf. And a beit apras, which generally, in the words of Chazal, is a field in which there was a kever, there was a grave that was plowed over. Whether it was uncertainty as to whether there was a grave there and they plowed it, or whether they knew there was a grave there, but they mistakenly plowed it, or whether it was a kever nevat. It was a kever that was lost, and then they ended up plowing the field. So in all these instances, that's beit apras, which is a field that is tamei midrabanan, because of the problems of Tuma that might be associated with the plowing of the field when there was a grave there. The truth is that the term Beit HaPras is a term that then is borrowed in usage to mean anything that has like a suffix tumam either abanan, and then it has a broader meaning. And the Gemara in other places says that they're all different types of beta prasot. So too over here, when we're speaking about beta pras, it means any of those tumot mid rabbanan that are associated with beta pras, they are not believed there because zeaklal davar shechashudim bo einem anim alav. Things that they don't necessarily keep or a chashud to keep those halachot, then they're not believed with regards to those halachot. Halachot that they believe are in effect, then they're makpin on them and they're believed with regards to those halachot. And generally, the basic distinction is the difference between things that are doraita and the rabbanan. Since sakachot, praot, and beta pras are all dini tuma mid rabbanan, therefore, we can't trust the kutim with regards to that because they don't even believe that that tuma exists. On the other hand, the issues of bechor, the issues of gvura, and tumata meit, all of those are issues that are mid doraita, and the kutim subscribe to them. Since they subscribe to them, then they're makpin on them like any other Israeli, and they can be trusted with regards to those matters. We'll see on tomorrow's daf whether that is a wholesale trust or only in certain circumstances that we do trust them. And even though now, as we said, that they are not makpin on Tumot Rabbanan, nevertheless, Tosafot says, with regards to Ketamim, they are ne'emanim because even though Ketem is a din derabbanan, it is a logical din that makes sense to say that the ketem is an indication of a flow of dam from the individual. And since they're makbin on ida de oraita, the ketem is just a natural extension of that, and they would subscribe to that issue of ketem, even though it's really only a din derabonon. Okay, we're going to stop here at the end of Nun Vav Amud Bet.